This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue along on Sports Map Radio. College basketball heading into its final few weeks of the regular season. Conference tournament time right around the corner. And then, of course, Selection Sunday leading us into March Madness. Let's get an idea of where we are in the college basketball world. Our good friend Jerry Palm joins us from CBS Sports on a progressive guest line. How are you, Jerry?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right, whatever metrics you use, whether it's KenPom or whether it's AP, coaches, whatever it is, how deep would you say? Is it very deep, middle deep in terms of the teams that are on the top end of college basketball?
I think there's some pretty decent depth. I don't get too wrapped up in metrics, even though, you know, I mean, obviously the net is part of the selection process, but it's not used as a way to compare teams. It's used to put teams in quadrants on your team sheets. You know, that KenPom is great, but it's so heavily influenced by margin of victory that whether you win or lose doesn't matter. There's a couple others out there, but just the metrics are not always the greatest way to figure things out. But, you know, I think the top four seeds are really good. I think the twos right behind it are almost as good as certainly number four. One, two, and three have sort of separated themselves. Connecticut, Purdue, Houston have sort of separated themselves a little bit from four through, say, maybe 12. But, you know, there's a lot of teams out there that could make a run to a national title this year. Nobody is that good that you just say, well, they can't be beat because, well, everybody has.
How do you look at Houston? I mean, this was a team that we've gone through this song and dance with Kelvin Sampson before, but he was in another conference. Now he's in the Big 12. The Big 12 has always been solid kind of with depth.
Yep.
But now there they are. They're on top of yet another conference.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I thought they'd be really competitive in this league. I thought Kansas would be the team that wins it. And I guess, who knows, maybe they still could. But Houston's been tremendous. You know, they've been what they are. You know, they're a lockdown defensive team. They're not a great offensive team, but they're certainly good enough. I like Houston. It's not the biggest surprise in the world that they're leading this league too. I mean, they've been a top five team for a few years now. So top five is top five. It doesn't matter what conference you play in. You're still going to be that level of a team if that's what you are.
UConn, how similar is this team from the one that won the national championship? They're getting a lot more accolades than they did last year, of course, being number one for most of the season. But how similar are they in terms of what we saw in Houston last year compared to now being 24-2?
They're similar in the sense that they're very talented and well-coached. They've got a quality big man. Different this year, Klingon versus Sanogo. Last year, Sanogo was more probably of a pure post. Klingon can do that. But he also has more skills away from the basket. I just think that their guards are tremendous. They defend really well. They can score. Everybody can score. There really aren't a lot of holes in UConn. That's an excellent team and probably will enter the tournament as the favorite to repeat their title.
Your thoughts, and I know this is an important team to you, Purdue, your thoughts on the Boilermakers this year?
When they take care of the ball, they're hard to beat.
Yeah.
You know, all three of their losses, their three losses, they average -9 turnover margin. So, you know, when they're sloppy, you can get them. But if you can't, but they're so hard to defend. Zach Edey is just, you know, what do? You know,
right.
Do you put one guy on him and let him get 30? Or do you put two guys on him and leave three-point shooters open all over the place? And they can all hit. It's a different team this year than last year, in part because Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer are a year older, stronger, not going to hit a wall like they did last year. But the addition of Lance Jones from Southern Illinois transfer gives them speed on the perimeter, another three-point shooter, and a great defender. It's now Purdue's playing a three-guard offense. So, you know, Mason Gillis, who was starting last year and his starter quality, comes off the bench now. And Purdue's deep. They'll go 9 deep. They can go 10 if they need to. They're a really good team. And probably, you know, them and Houston, you know, the biggest challengers to UConn. But those two teams, Purdue and Houston, are very different teams.
The thing for Purdue is that listen, they lost to a 16 seed, but the last team that did that won the national championship the very next year. So maybe that will be on the Boilermakers' plate.
Well, that, I mean, that from, you know, your mouth to God's ears. But but they, I mean, they are better this year. They have almost everybody back from that team. Certainly everybody who played meaningful, you know, minutes is back from that team, and they're a year older and a year better, and you still have the National Player of the Year in Zach Edey, and he's going to be the National Player of the Year again this year. So it's they certainly are a handful to beat, and if you can't get the ball out of their hands, if you can't take it away from them, they're probably going to beat you.
It's. I want to get to another team here that's in the top five, and that's Tennessee, because Rick Barnes has these really good teams, and they get to the tournament, and they don't fulfill some of the promise that people think. And there's no different this year. People here where I live in Nashville are still like, yeah, we'll see. But Dalton Connect has been an amazing addition to this team.
Yeah, Purdue saw them in the Maui Invitational, and, I mean, they're tough. Tennessee's tough, but Connect hadn't really connected yet.
Yeah, good point.
But, you know, now he's caught fire since then. And, yeah, I mean, it's been a difference maker for Tennessee. They're really good. I like them still to win the SEC. I think they could challenge for a number one seed. Arizona, Carolina, Tennessee, maybe even Marquette could still be, I think, number one seeds. I think there's that potential there. I feel like I'm leaving someone out. But, you know, those teams are, you know, those are really good teams. Now, Arizona's at a disadvantage because I don't think they have any quad one games left on their schedule. I'm not even sure how many quad one games are left that they could even get, because there's a huge gap between them and the rest of the Pac-12. So, you know, while all these SEC teams and Big Ten teams and all these other teams, you know, Big 12, they're chasing, they got all these quad one games left. Arizona doesn't have any. So by the time Arizona could win out, and somebody else could pass them just because the resume gets so much better.
Staying in the SEC, do you find there's a lot of kind of beating each other up a little bit here, but do you find that conference pretty deep when it comes to Selection Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I've got the bracket I've been doing lately has got 9 teams from the SEC and 9 from the Big 12. So those are big numbers for sure. The team I was forgetting was Kansas.
Kansas.
Depth is a problem for them. And you may need that in the tournament, but you might not need it as much. It really, in the tournament, you're only playing, you know, 2 games a week, 2 games in 3 days, and you get some time off. So maybe the depth isn't as big an issue unless you have foul trouble during a game. That's probably where the depth becomes a problem for Kansas.
We always get to this time of year kind of wondering where the mid-majors are. Is this a good year for mid-majors? Is it not?
Well, I mean, Dayton is a team the committee considered for a number 4 seed on the reveal on Saturday. I've got them as a 4 now since, you know, the results, because of the results since then. So, yeah, that's a team that's capable of a move. You know, they're the team. They were likely the number 1 overall seed the pandemic year.
Yes.
You know, they didn't get and, you know, Dayton doesn't get those kinds of opportunities. I mean, if I was gutted for anybody that year, it was Dayton, because how often do they get those chances? Well, this team is not that good, but this team is still pretty good and has a chance to make some noise in March. And that's certainly the best of the non-majors. But I would not rule out Indiana State as long as nobody ranks them again. And because they got ranked for the first time since 1979 and lost twice that week. And Grand Canyon, who beat San Diego State in the regular season and is sitting at 20-something-2, you know, they've got to win their tournament. Both those teams, Indiana State and Grand Canyon, have to win their conference tournaments to get in, whereas Dayton does not. But if they get in, those are going to be really dangerous teams.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports. Always good catching up with you, my friend. Thank you so much. It's a good time of year.
All right, thanks.
You got it. Jerry Palm, again, a Purdue guy, as I mentioned earlier. Remember when Virginia lost to UMBC? They were the one seed. Tony Bennett and the Cavaliers, and they became the first one seed to lose to a 16. They responded by winning the national title. Maybe this is Purdue. The Purdue lost to Fairleigh Dickinson and Tobin Anderson, and maybe this is the year as the second-ranked team in the country, or the third-ranked team in the country, I should say. Houston is number 2, winning last night. And maybe Purdue will have some shed of light But it is interesting. One question I wanted to ask him, but I didn't want to put him on the spot. So I wanted to look this up during the break. And that is, and I know this sounds weird, but remember the story of Merrimack? Remember Merrimack last year? They won their conference tournament and they couldn't go to the NCAA tournament. This allowed Fairleigh Dickinson to go to the NCAA tournament. And Fairleigh Dickinson took advantage of that by beating Purdue. So the fact that Merrimack was, because they were moving up, and you know, you move up,
yeah,
you get this, like,
about that.
Remember this? Remember
yeah.
this? Like, you couldn't play, like, wait, thank you for moving up, but you got to show that you can stay here for a few years. So Merrimack won its conference tournament, but they couldn't go. Fairleigh Dickinson took that spot and then won their first round game against Purdue. And so it's almost like a sort of a, I don't know, what do you call that thing that butterfly effect, right?
Right.
Right. Whatever it is, you know, butterfly flaps its wings in you get rain in Central Park. That's what Jeff Goldblum said in Jurassic Park. But can Merrimack go to the tournament this year? I didn't want to put him on the spot because maybe he doesn't know that answer, but I might have to look that up during the break. Can Merrimack go to the tournament? Because we were feeling sorry for them last year. They put in all this effort to win their conference tournament, and they weren't going to go, knowing that, like, look, we're doing this for pride. We're not going. And then once people got word of this, they were like, wait a minute, hold on. We really are doing this? Yeah, we're really doing this. They're not going. Wow, that's too bad. They almost won. Yeah, they're not going. So sit down, relax. Fairleigh Dickinson will be in your conference bracket. But I wonder if Merrimack can get in now. You know what I'm going to look up on the break? Shelby Wag's site, bracketwag.com. He's always got, like, who he thinks is. Maybe he'll have Merrimack on there. I don't know, just a silly, silly question on my part. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call. Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Jerry Palm, CBS Sports and College Basketball. So I did look it up about Merrimack. They can enter the NCAA tournament.
Woohoo!
Yeah, now, are they in position to?
Yeah, well, they are, I don't know. They're, according to Shelby Mast, they are 17-10. So I don't know what that means in the Northeast Conference. But they've done, this is their fifth year in that conference that has moved up into Division I. So this would be, and this would allow them to be eligible if they were to win the conference tournament, or what? You know, that's the only way a Northeast 10 team's going to win it is go to the tournament, is to win the conference tournament. So, but there you go. So, but they were a good Division II basketball team. Then they moved up into this conference, and then they finished first in the regular season, but there was no postseason for them in the last couple. You know, obviously because they couldn't qualify. So. Nevertheless, there you go. So there's a, you know, see, the internet is a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing. All right. I can't believe I'm doing this for a second straight show, but I'm getting kind of bitter about this because I know we live in an outrage culture. I get it. It's a kind of a new world. I get it. People love being angry. They love being victims, and they love feeling like somebody is putting them in their place and they better stand up to that. I completely get it. In some places, it's very justified. Some places, it's massively manufactured. And in this case, it's massively manufactured. I talked about this earlier this morning about the All-Star Game. And I said, I think people are losing their minds over the All-Star Game. If you are of certain age and you remember sort of the beauty of the All-Star Game and the pageantry of the All-Star Game, it feels like players don't care anymore, and I get it. But I don't think in the big picture of sports, an All-Star Game is something to lose sleep over. Like I was saying in the monologue in hour one, if you were talking about a lackadaisical effort by both teams in the playoffs or a Super Bowl, if there was a feeling like the Chiefs and the 49ers didn't care about the end result of the Super Bowl, like they were playing the Super Bowl and they were just like, whatever. They were just missing tackles and it was just like a flag football game. And they were like, I know you thought this was going to be a competitive for the championship, but we both agreed we are just going to roll through this and nobody gets hurt and we're okay. And who cares? We would be outraged by it because we're invested in the emotion of a championship. We are invested in the history and the importance of being somebody winning a title. The All-Star Game doesn't have this. So to get worked up over it, to get bothered by it, to be concerned by it. I just don't see the I don't see the picture you're trying to paint of doom and gloom. I mean, I was listening to Jason Whitlock has a podcast, and he's controversial and everything. I find myself listening to it because he says things that he tries to make everything huge and big, and I'm a big picture guy, so I want to kind of get his angle on it. He's like, and the All-Star game is a degradation of society as a whole. We're lazier. We don't want to do anything. And it's like, all right, let's not go overboard here. It's an All-Star game players don't care about. They've made it clear they don't care about it, but it ain't the end of the world. The other thing that's driving me crazy is, and this is again, this is when I can't believe I'm talking about this second day, is Kenny Smith. He's now doing the tour where he's having to go on these podcasts and defend himself for saying, "Hey, I just made a recommendation that Sabrina Ionescu should be shooting from the WNBA 3-point line because she's used to it." And everyone's wanting to make him out to be this massive sexist that believes women shouldn't even be in competitive sports and they should be locked up in a kitchen making food for their man. And he's like, that's not what I'm getting at. He's got to defend himself from people who are saying, oh, so you're saying women shouldn't play basketball at all? It's like, that's not what I said. And then I heard he was having to defend himself by saying it's about muscle memory. It's about going and putting yourself in two competitors competing in their own environment, in their own situation. Use a WNBA ball at the WNBA 3-point line. Can you make more from that you're used to than Steph Curry with an NBA ball from the NBA 3-point line that he's used to? Now, I like the fact that she shot from the NBA line. I like that because she almost won this thing. And then she wanted to do it. That's not my point. Kenny Smith and I can argue about that. We can debate about that without me thinking he's a misogynist. Why can't other people? Why is this guy defending his point without having to say, oh, and by the way, I think women should be able to play basketball because we've gone crazy. We've gone crazy. Now, Reggie Miller didn't help anything during the broadcast when he said, according to you, you want her to be playing with dolls. Now, I got a question for Reggie Miller. What's wrong with playing with dolls if you're a young lady or a young boy? I don't care. Are you saying that girls who play with dolls are somehow not living up to some sort of potential? If little girls like to play with dolls, that somehow they're less than girls who shoot baskets? It's okay for Reggie Miller to say, well, if you're playing with dolls, somehow how come he's not answering for that? Because I had a daughter that played with dolls and also shot baskets. But I also know a lot of girls that play with dolls who'd have no interest in shooting baskets, and that's okay too. So let's not pretend that every little girl has to grow up doing exactly what the boys are doing. Because we don't live in that world. Sometimes they do. And sometimes they don't. And it's okay either way, gentlemen. And I'm furious with this because Kenny Smith was just making an observation about a competition. And of course we did, because we can't help ourselves. Of course we blew it out of proportion, because we do it all the time. We do it every statement anybody ever makes, all the time. He's not saying that the NBA shouldn't exist. He's not saying that the WNBA is a waste of time. He's not saying Sabrina Ionescu should be nowhere near the competition. She should be back home, on the couch, or preparing dinner. Of course not. He was just looking at it from a competitive lens. And he was saying, hey, you know what? It's kind of unfair. She has to shoot from a line she's not accustomed to. Now, again, as I said yesterday, maybe he's not aware that she practices from the men's 3-point line, that she trains herself at that distance. So maybe the WNBA line is a little easier. Right? But if you had, again, and his point is well taken, if you took If you were at Medalist Club in Jupiter, Florida, where Tiger Woods is a member, and Anakin Sorenstam, I think, is a member there too, and they said, hey, let's play a match. Now, let's say Tiger said, you can play from your tees, I'll play from my tees. But let's say Annika said, you know what, Tiger? Actually, I play from the men's tees here. And he goes, okay, great. That'd be fine. But is Tiger Woods saying that Annika Sorenstam would be an irrelevant athlete because he suggested that she play from the tees he thought she was accustomed to? Where have we gone here? Where have we gone wrong here? I don't know why Kenny Smith has to do the apology tour, and he's not even apologizing, but he's doing the tour to defend himself, and people are saying Kenny Smith has made it worse. He's made it worse? How? Because we can't have intelligent conversations anymore. We can't. Those days are over. We now have to have emotional, hysterical, screaming, and name-calling conversations. That's where we're at now. What Kenny Smith said is I don't agree with, but he's not misogynistic for suggesting it. He was trying to say, hey, I think there's a level of fairness that I'm kind of not seeing here. This between these two players, one has the advantage because one is used to doing this activity on a daily basis, and the other one is adjusting to meet that level. And I don't think there was anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything misogynistic about that. And for Reggie Miller to imply that he thought she just didn't belong anywhere near a basketball court, shame on him for signaling to a certain crowd that now get out the guns and the knives on Kenny Smith for me, if you don't mind. Signaling to the vultures out there that would descend on Kenny Smith to say, ah, here we go, guys. Here's a feast for you. I am presenting you a misogynist. I am presenting you somebody who doesn't believe that women can play basketball. I'm presenting somebody that thinks women should be in the kitchen. I'm presenting somebody who thinks that women are irrelevant in our society. Feast on them, people. I'm sending you a big meal. And they did. And Reggie Miller should be ashamed of himself, too, because he participated in, instead of an intelligent debate, he went right down to the lowest thing you can do in a debate.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I'm watching this video. How did I miss this in my morning prep? The Texas A&M Commerce Incarnate Word game. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Last night, so Southland Conference basketball. Catch it if you can. Texas A&M Commerce and Incarnate Word played a basketball game last night, which Texas A&M Commerce won 76-72, but that's not the story. The story is, in the post-game handshake, a massive brawl broke out between both schools. Now, I'm just getting this, so I apologize. I actually apologize. I wish I had saw this earlier. I would have gotten more context to it. But I'm riveted by it. Like, this was a handshake. So at the end of the game, they're in line, and they're doing the handshake. And then when Texas A&M Commerce is done, Incarnate Word's done, here comes a wave of players of Incarnate Word attacking Texas A&M Commerce players. And they are just pounding each other. And, like, you've got players fighting student managers, I'm assuming, because there are people in street clothes. Some of them may be players from the bench. You've got coaches trying to break this up, but it's to no avail. It's just too much. You've got fight breaking over on one side. Everyone's trying to keep the peace. This is going to be a mess. You've got one player, he's racing to fight another player. So he's going all the way across the court to go after another player. I don't know if fans came in out of the stands. I don't think so. The more I'm watching this, it seems like it is player, coach, personnel. They're trying to get the play. I mean, seriously, one guy is holding back a player that is so enraged, and then he lets him go, and he just starts running over to another player. Oh, my goodness. Total chaos.
It's amazing. I'm just curious. I mean, you know, other than that, we would never talk about this game ever.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it probably has the biggest, what was Joe Buck saying? A disgusting, vile act.
Yeah.
That we have in sports.
Again,
right now.
I don't know the context, so I don't know what was said or done or how there was response. I just saw it, and I'm like, oh my God, I got to stop what I'm doing and bring this up.
Yeah, I don't know what led to it.
Yeah. I don't know. Incarnate Word is a Catholic school.
I mean,
given the name,
right?
Yeah.
It'd be weird if it wasn't.
They are more than happy to duke it out with the opponents of Texas A&M Commerce.
Yeah. Maybe it's, you know, maybe they're, maybe they said something bad about religion.
I don't know. Maybe it was just dirty play in the game and it just bled into something said somebody, I guess, in the line. Holy mackerel. Holy mackerel. But nevertheless, talking to Jerry Palm at the top of the hour about college basketball. So you got basically 2 weeks, maybe a little. There's like 5-6 games left in the regular season, maybe 2-3 weeks that's left, and then conference tournament time. And you are talking like, and one of the questions out of the gate was Houston, and I'm very impressed with Houston because they were really good in the AAC. Obviously, you know, they were a team that made it to the Final Four a couple years ago, and they were the number one seed last year, but they were going to the Big 12. And as good as Kelvin Sampson has his teams defensively, look, you're going to the Big 12, right? You're going to play with another level of little better competition. The Big 12, if you were to say any year, any given year, I'll send you to one conference tournament. That's it. Wherever you want to go, you tell me. All expense paid trip to a conference tournament in America. A majority of people would take the Big 12. Some would take the ACC. The Big East always has a good one. Maybe you're an SEC fan. Maybe you're, I don't know, the Pac-12. But if you were to say, what value am I getting? Like, what value for my buck am I going to get going to a conference tournament to watch 4 games and 5 games or whatever it is at the beginning to all the way to the conference championship? One of your best bets, if not the best bet, has always been the Big 12. Right? It's always produced some really good teams. I mean, forget Kansas. Kansas is a given. That's kind of like Kentucky in the SEC. Kansas is a given. But they've had years where Texas has been good. Kansas State has been good. Texas Tech has been good. Oklahoma has been good. Oklahoma State has been good. Like, they've had years where these teams have been, you know, it's been deep ranked. And that's what they were presenting this year. And Houston was going into that conference. So it's okay if you're like, okay, you know what? They lost like 3 games last year in the AAC. Maybe they'll lose, I don't know, 6 in the Big 12. They've lost 3. They should be. I know UConn's statement against Marquette was huge, but UConn was unanimously voted in both the coaches' poll and the AP poll as the number one team in the country, both unanimously. But, man, Houston is right behind them. Defensively, they're giving up 55 points a game in this conference.
Yeah, and if you say, you know, you slot the top four right now, you know, those are the four number one seeds.
Yeah.
And it goes chalk. It's almost unfortunate you're going to have Houston and Purdue battling it in the Final Four. I mean, not unfortunate. I mean, that would be a fantastic Final Four.
It'd be a fantastic game. Wonderful.
But you almost feel like one of those two teams should be championed.
Yeah. That's kind of the beauty.
That's almost like a championship fight. But, you know, you have UConn over there who, I said this yesterday, I really don't know any players on UConn. And it's amazing to me that there isn't one standout player. That this is probably one of the more complete teams I've seen in a long
time.
That
is a great, great way to describe it. They are not dominated by a 20-point score. In fact, I think Cam Spencer is their leading scorer at like 16 a game. They are not dominant by a guy that has the ball constantly
like a Zach
run
Eddie.
Through him.
Like, we all know who Zach Eddie is. You know,
right,
and he's
right.
You know, he's the reigning player of the year, and he's, you know, the 7'4" monster out of Purdue. But I mean, everyone looks to him. Like, if Purdue's struggling, they're like, okay, Zach, you taking over now? And that's not UConn.
Yeah, that's not UConn. I mean, they're getting production from Tristan Newton. They're getting production from Donovan Klingon, who played great last year. Alex Caravan. There's a lot of people on UConn that are getting the basketball and averaging double digits a night, but they don't have that one dominating player. This is what Dan Hurley has done. He's created a very, very good system at UConn that won him a national title last year, and now he's got him the number one team. And they've been number one for most of the year.
I think they're all season.
Pretty much, yeah. I don't know in the early part of the polls, but I would, if you told me they were all season, they've been number one all season, I'd probably believe it. right? But I think Purdue was number one 1 week. I'm not sure though.
I'd have to double check.
But you know, like, and their win against Marquette was really, again, pretty eye opening because Marquette was riding like a 7-game win streak going into that game, or an 8-game win streak going into that game, and Marquette will beat you inside, they'll beat you outside, but UConn took care of them relatively easily. And that was a really big, Big East game for them. Big, Big East game.
Now, here's the thing. I just looked. I went to preseason and then week two.
Yeah.
Kansas was number one for a while.
Kansas was number one? Okay.
Yeah, UConn started off the season as the number 6 seed.
Wow. See, there you go.
And just and number then, 5 the next week, and they just slowly kept climbing
eventually
up.
Eventually climbed it up. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot, again, this is – I always like asking how deep the tournament is, right? Because I think there is a – when you are talking about a single elimination tournament, the way it is – the way this thing is set up, I want to know, like, if you're a 4 seed, are we talking about a huge hill to climb because the ones and the twos are way up there? Or are the ones and the twos more where you are? If we're talking about depth in this tournament. And I don't know if I'm ranked 10th, right, which would put me as a 3 seed maybe in this thing. I don't know how close I am to Houston, right? Now, it may not matter, but I don't know. I mean, like, you know, like I've seen some teams, you know, kind of be really high up there, just taking a fall for a bit. But I love what he said about the SEC. I think the SEC, I've said this many years, you know, being around a lot of SEC schools. Over the last 20 years, they've made a big investment in basketball, and it's really starting to pay off over the last 5 or 6 years. They've really, you know, every now and then, Kentucky was always good because they care about it in the Bluegrass State. Florida won some titles. And there was Arkansas and Nolan Richardson winning a championship in the 90s. You've got Mississippi State 1 year, I think, made it to the Final Four.
It's about time they started spending some of that football
right.
money.
So that was a big push. Mike Slive had it back when he was the commissioner. He started saying, look, I remembered I've been doing this for 20 years, talk radio, 20 years. I remember telling people SEC basketball is unwatchable. It's unwatchable basketball.
Yeah.
It was bad.
It really was.
It really was bad. I mean, outside again, Florida, a couple of teams that would pop up. But the overall health of the SEC was unwatchable basketball. And they made a real effort to say, guys, let's stop it. We can be a football conference and we can be a basketball conference. There's plenty to go around. And let's focus our attention on that. And you started hiring better coaches, right? Rick Barnes, you've got John Calipari taking the Kentucky job is a no-brainer. Kentucky's on that level, right? But they've gotten some very good coaches over the years who have been willing to take SEC schools rather than a job in a Big 12 or a job in a Pac-12 or a job in the Big East. The SEC is starting to say, look, we're going to give you the better practice facilities. We're going to give you better amenities. We're going to give you a better budget for the things that you're going to need. And we're going to make things more updated. There was a big joke about going on the campus of Mississippi, you know, Ole Miss, and it's dilapidated. Now they've got one of the best venues in the SEC at the Pavilion. The Pavilion is one of the nicest places to watch a college basketball game. They put the money back into it, and it's been paying off. But, you know, when you go – but I said earlier, the Big 12, for me, is still where I think Big 12 basketball is so fun and so deep, and the fact that Houston has not missed one beat going from one conference to the other, I think Kelvin Sampson should get a lot of credit for that. It is easy if you're not paying attention to see Houston on top of the rankings and go, yeah, isn't that where they've been for the last couple of years? This is not that. They changed conferences. They are playing brand new opponents. And yet they're still on top of one of the toughest conferences in college basketball. That's very, very impressive. But they're doing it with defense. They're doing it by being stifling. Like Jerry said, they're not one of the best offensive teams in the country, but they will hold you to less than 60 points if you're not careful. And in a blink of an eye, you're going to find yourself fighting a Houston team for every single inch of ground on the basketball court. And if you can do that for 6 games, you'll be cutting down the nets as national champions. And let's see if Houston, you know, will be able to do that come April and early, come March and early April. All right, we are continuing on Sports Map Radio. Again, we are going to be looking at and kind of a couple of things in terms of free agents and when we come back.
The Wake-Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, the NBA returns on Thursday. Thank God, because I got to. Everyone's calmed down from the All-Star Game problem. Oh, God. Can't wait. Can't wait till we're
until
just back
next year.
To normal. Golly. Until next year, yeah. When next year, when they score 250, then everybody else will be screaming. I don't know. It's just an All-Star Game. I don't understand what the big deal was. But maybe, you know what? Maybe people take that seriously. Maybe am I putting down people who love the All-Star Game and want it to be better? Is it like, you know, when somebody goes, look, I love the Daytona 500 and I wanted it to end with a green flag. And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, William Byron won the Daytona 500. Like, what? But that's not how I love this event. I don't want it to end on a caution. I go, okay. I take your word for it. Maybe you love the All-Star Game so much. You just want it. You want it to be awesome.
I mean, I don't know what you want. That's the problem now, right? It's like we've gotten to this point. I don't know what you expect out of an All-Star Game anymore.
My thing is this. If you are in the NBA and you say, okay, you know what? We ain't doing the All-Star Game anymore. Okay, I literally couldn't care less. Like I'm not gonna go, oh, that's awful. If you don't want anymore, don't want anymore. If you want it and you want it in this form, and you just put up with it one night, do it. If you want it to be more competitive, you know what you can do. I want to give credit on Twitter. I want to say it was our Jeremy Branham put this out. $1 million to the winner, nothing for the loser. Like if you want to do it that way, say hey, every player is getting $1 million. You got 15 guys or 10, 11, 12 guys in the roster, whatever it is, whatever the All-Star roster is. You guys get all the money and the loser gets zero. Well, then you go, well, then you're going to see a lot of clothesline and you're going to see a lot of hard fouls. But if that's what the people want, give the people what they want. So have you heard about this movie, Madam Web, that's out there in movie land?
I've heard of it.
How horrible it is.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. I haven't seen a preview of it. I haven't watched it myself either.
I don't even know what it's about. I think it's a part of the Spider-Man lore. The only thing I know is everybody wants to say how horrible it is. Mm-hmm. It's now becoming famous for being horrible. Like that's what I'm starting to love now is like the idea that instead of you would go to the movie to see it for yourself, maybe Siskel and Ebert gave it a couple thumbs down, but you're like, whatever. Now everybody's a remember there was only like three critics in America.
Yep.
That you cared about.
Oh, there was really only two.
There was really only two, but I'm throwing Richard Roper in there because maybe you read him in the New York
Times
maybe
you were
or whatever
go, who
he
was the guy with the mustache?
Maybe but Siskel and Ebert were really the only two people
you cared most about
that you cared about. That was it.
Remember you remember the guy with the mustache? He's like had a big gigantic mustache.
Who was the guy with the mustache? Oh, Gene Shalit?
Gene Shalit. Thank
so
you.
Now there's four. There's only three. I'm gonna take Richard Roper down. I'm gonna elevate Gene Shalit.
Yeah, because Roper came later.
Roper came later. He actually replaced Siskel, who tragically died of cancer in his early 50s. But so there were three you cared about. That was it. So let's say the new Indiana Jones movie came out, or there was a comedy with Rodney Dangerfield, or what other goofy 80s thing that was out there, like Goonies or something. You would watch at the movies, and these two guys would talk about it, and Roger Ebert would be like, it's a big thumbs down for me. And then Gene would go, well, I couldn't disagree with you more, Roger. I loved this picture. I loved the musical act that was in this picture. I loved the writing. I think direction was exceptional. And I think you're being overly critical of this story. I think it's a heartwarming story. And then you would go, all right, who do I believe? Who do I trust? You know what? I'll just go find out myself. And then you'd go to the movies anyway. Like, seriously, if Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert told 10-year-old me that Return of the Jedi stunk, do you think I'm going to not go to see Return of the Jedi? I'm going to go see it. But like even the any other 80s movies, I'm going to go see Maverick, you know, Top Gun. I'm going to go see Days of Thunder.
Yep.
I'm going to try to get into the rated R movie about a college fraternity.
No, I remember it became a running thing. Like if the critic hated it, that meant the movie was going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was for a long time. We used to do that all the time. It's like, oh, if the critics hate this, it's going to be a fun movie.
And it was very simplistic.
It may not be award-winning, but it's going to be entertaining.
They would, you know, instead of going 3 stars, 3.5 stars, 4.5 stars, they just went thumbs up, thumbs down. That's it.
That was it.
That's all you needed. And, man, so if you were old enough to remember when you'd go to the newspaper and you'd open up to the movie section of the newspaper, remember how a big deal that was? When
every
you would
Friday.
See, like, you'd go,
Thursday.
I'm going to movies. What's playing? And you'd go to the paper and you'd open up the paper and they would have all the theaters in your area and they would have all the movies. And then some were big ads, like the big blockbuster that was coming out would be a big ad. And then if Siskel and Ebert liked the movie, 2 thumbs up would be the big bold lettering. And I've always wondered, would that go to your head if you were a movie critic? If you were Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, would that go to your head? Meaning, like, the studios respect us so much that in print advertising for this movie, they are telling people we liked it. I got to think that would. I got to think you would feel a level of, like, power. Like, the studios are wondering, does Gene like this? Is Roger like this? Okay, so now fast forward to our day and age. We've got 1,000 of these YouTube movie critic guys. And some people are like, hey, you know what? I did like this movie. Or, you know, I did think that Oppenheimer was a little too long. Or Killers of the Flower Moon, I was riveted. I couldn't get away from it. And I have my favorites. I like, there's a guy in Scotland who does movie reviews. He's called the Critical Drinker.
Okay.
And my son got me, he told me, you should watch his video, man. He's funny. But every time my son tells me that, I go, eh, I'm watching it. You and I are 2 different generations. What you find funny, I don't necessarily find funny.
But you found him funny?
But here's what happened. He kept bugging me about it. Because he was doing a review of The Rise of Skywalker. And I didn't like Rise of Skywalker. And he said, Dad, you'll love this guy. He's funny. You got to watch this review. And I'm like, all right, whatever. But then he would go, did you watch that video yet? I'm like, oh, no, you got to watch that video. Here, I'll send it to you. Now, when somebody sends you, don't you feel obligated at that point? I don't, you know, like when a buddy goes, hey, man, did you see that TikTok? And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, no. And they're like, I'll send it to you. When you send it to you, I go, I got to watch it now. You've taken the time to send it to me. I want to watch it now.
I feel like I'm getting videos sent to me all the time.
All the time. So my son sent me his video. I'm like, all right, I'll watch it. And it was really good. And it was very funny. It was very insightful, very intelligent. And I decided, all right, I'm going to watch it. This Madame Web movie, again, I don't even know the plot of it. I don't even know. It's Spider-Woman, I guess. I don't know. I guess it's something like that.
Spider-Woman's mom? Because
It's got Dakota Johnson. If I'm not mistaken, isn't that Don Johnson's daughter?
Yes, it is.
And wasn't she in those 50 Shades of Grey movies?
Yeah, I think also, isn't that Melanie Griffith's?
Melanie Griffith's daughter? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so she's in this movie. It's spider-ish, in superhero-ish, whatever, comic book land.
It's Marvel.
Movie. It's Marvel. It's Spider-Man. But it's the Sony Spider-Man. It's not the Marvel Universe Spider-Man. Sony.
Right.
Sony's got Spider-Man 2. They have it also. So they got to use it to keep the rights of it. They got to produce some content with it. You can't just sit it on the shelf. So they decided to throw this steaming pile of garbage at us, apparently, because people love making videos about it. Love ripping it to pieces. They love it. They're having fun criticizing this horrible movie.
Now, do you think the adverse thing could happen? Like, would a studio jump on board with trashing their movie? Like, get guys to trash their movie? Because then all of a sudden it's like, well, we're going to get more eyes.
Yeah, you know what? Here's what I may not do. I may not buy a box. I may not go to the box office to see it. But I might see it if it's $2 and I want to see how bad it actually is. I don't want to be left out of the "it's how horrible is it" conversation.
Yeah, everyone else is talking about it. What do you mean?
Right.
I don't know.
Everyone else is talking about it, like, do I want to be part of that crowd that says this movie stinks? So, but yeah, no, people, I would be a terrible movie critic. I really would be a terrible
movie critic. I'm with you.
If you said to me, hey, you should start a YouTube channel, critiquing movies, I would be laughed off the platform. People would be, this guy doesn't understand anything about movies.
No, I would, because I find it hard to hate movies. Because if it's a movie that's really, really bad, I do think about the fact, I don't know why I do this, but I do think about the fact of like, yeah, everyone worked really hard on this.
Yeah, no. You know what, dude? I totally agree with you. You know what?
Then I can't trash it. I can say I don't like it. It's not for me, but I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, that movie was just god awful. Should be buried beneath a dung heap.
Patton Oswalt has a joke about that on Bad Movies. He's like, somebody woke up and made brewed coffee for this crew.
Yes.
Somebody built a craft services table so people could eat while making this film. Like, there's people editing it and sound designing it and building sets and for this crappy movie. And I agree with you. As I've gotten older, I've started realizing, boy, a lot of effort went into making garbage.